For more on the calls to change that, we are joined by Erin Carnes. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Criminology and Criminal Justice at the University of Alabama. Hi, good afternoon to you.
Hi, good afternoon to you as well.
Let's just hone in on the terminology here. How significant is it that this shooting has been labeled domestic terrorism?
So I think it's really incredibly significant from a public perception standpoint. And whether we're differentiating between domestic and transnational terrorism or not, the label of terrorism carries so much weight with it. It influences how people perceive violence and the policies that they think are appropriate to respond to violence. So I think we should really not underscore, we can't underscore enough how important it is to appropriately label this violence as terrorism.
Well, it's been interesting to see that following this incident, we have heard many calls in the U.S. Calling for domestic terrorism to be clearly defined as a federal crime. What would the impact of that be?
So the largest impact of defining domestic terrorism as a crime legally is that it gives more opportunities and more weight that prosecutors and investigators can bring to address this kind of violence.
Okay, so would that make the social media platforms responsible for the spread of these ideologies?
It certainly could. I mean, this is something, if we think about, how the U.S. government has responded to transnational terrorism, companies that are in any way providing support for groups, particularly we think of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, that they're, potentially deplatforming, that there are punishments associated with that. So if you see something analogous with domestic terrorism, we could really see companies potentially being held more accountable for the content on their sites.
Do you see any lessons from other counterterror efforts that can be applied to these cases?
I mean, absolutely. I think one of the most important things to keep in mind is that, when we look at the global war on terror, so many of the policy responses have been, harsh, expensive, lengthy, and quite honestly, counterproductive. So really keeping in mind that the policies that we enact should be based on evidence, social science research, and be proportional to the threat that these sorts of attacks pose.
Well, it's been interesting to see that one of the concerns that's come up is that broadening this mandate of federal agencies, that it could ultimately infringe on American civil liberties. What do you make of that argument?
I mean, I think that there is, taking some of the lessons that we've learned from other counterterrorism efforts, that's something that I think that there's reason to have some concern about when we saw some infringement of civil liberties with things like, NSA surveillance and other issues that can damage public trust in the government and in law enforcement and ultimately make counterterrorism efforts less effective.
Well, white nationalist ideologies are certainly not new there in the U.S. or here in Canada. Why do you think it's taken so long to view this ideology as a potential terrorist threat?
So, I mean, amongst people like myself who research this, this is not news to us at all. If you look at the data, about half of attacks in the U.S. over the last decade or so have had some far-right motivation, whether it's white nationalism or other far-right causes. Among the public, though, it's, terrorism, at least particularly since 9/11, has been framed so much as an us versus them. The threat comes from abroad, from people who broadly don't look like us, don't worship like us, et cetera. And it's easy to think of threats as being from people different from us. It's a lot harder for people to internalize and accept that some of these threats are coming from, our neighbors, our countrymen, people who on the surface are not necessarily distinguishable from anyone else in the public. And that is something that people have a really hard time wrapping their heads around and accepting.
Well, that's what I was thinking, this threat from within. I mean, you're an academic, but you're also an American. How does that feel?
Yes. I think I've studied this long enough that I'm pretty unsurprised by it as a phenomenon, but it's certainly something just playing between that American and academic, trying to convince the rest of the public that, that we know what we're talking about when we're measuring this sort of violence and the real need to have clear definitions of what we're talking about and to apply those definitions across all types of violence that might fit them, not, you know, focusing only on things that suit some predetermined narrative that we have.
Yeah, I want to get personal with you here, though. Do you apply this kind of thing to your everyday life?
In what sense?
Well, just is a definition important, or is there fear in any level, in any form?
You know, that's a great question. I'm actually from Dayton, Ohio, and have, you know, spent time in the Oregon district where there was another mass shooting this past weekend. So there definitely is a personal aspect of this to me. As an academic, though, I think I try to, you know, remember that, you know, what the statistics are on this, and, you know, try to just do my best to conduct research and engage with policy members and the public in ways that can reduce this violence, because that's, I think, all I know how to actually impact this myself.
Erin, thank you very much. I appreciate your time this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me.